Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
It's Football Weekly Extra. Today, extra special Champions League edition, rounding up all the midweek mayhem. There's Milan beaten at home by Zurich, Rangers Sevilla, the derby of the Orange Men, and Liverpool in Florence with the worst Lucas review since the Star Wars prequels. We preview all the big weekend matchups: Chelsea-Liverpool, Wolves-Pompey and Sevilla-Real. Is the Liga title race ready for a third horse? Plus, we enjoy your post, Sean Ingle talks Luton, and there's more ephemera than a stereo radio station. All of that in Football Weekly Extra. Got it yet, listeners? Okay, then. Right. Well, welcome on board, everybody, and I do mean welcome, because today... extra special. We've got Sean Ingle back in the pod. Just back from Berlin, all eyeliner and sallow skin. Goodness knows what you've been up to, Sean, on your sabbatical.
Guten Tag, James. Sincy good.
Oh, very much so, yes.
And I had a great time in Berlin. I'd like to thank all the Football Weekly listeners that sort of gave me suggestions for things to do and the like. So thank you.
What kind of thing did they suggest, Sean?
All sorts of sordid things. No, it's just right tips and what to see and what to do. I got out to see FC Onion, or FC Union, I think it's, we'd call it, but FC Onion, as the fans. Onion.
All right, that knowing chuckle is, of course, the master chief on himself, Raphael Honigstein.
I'm still chuckling about Sinzi Good.
Right, okay.
I've never heard that one before.
All right.
Yeah.
But you've been away for a while. Lovely to have you here as well.
Thank you,
Raphael.
James. Lovely
and perhaps
to be here.
You can discuss FC Onion with your chum Sean later on, after the rest of us are gone. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
Sorry, I just dropped a pen.
No problem.
You've caught me looking for a pen.
Well, you don't need to look down, because it was near here and near there. I thought it could be floating anywhere. It might be up there somewhere. I think I see it. In fact, there you go. Barry, very exciting week. Did you enjoy the midweek round of Champions League games?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people say, oh, they're all boring in the group stage, but far from it this week.
Well, they are quite boring.
Wow, there's plenty of excitement. How about that Fiorentina-Liverpool game then, hey? What?
Yeah, it was good. The people seem to think that the world has come to an end because Liverpool lost an away game to a Serie A club in the Champions League.
As the Sky commentator said, it's one of the biggest nights in Florence's history.
Yeah.
No, Renaissance, all that.
Well, I mean, Sky commentators are obviously renowned for their hyperbole. I think there was one stage towards the end of the game and Gerrard looped a feeble header wide and high and wide. And, you know, it was Andy Gray, Gerrard! As if, you know, it's been clawed away by the keeper. But Liverpool, they lost fair and square. They didn't play particularly well. They didn't play well at all, particularly in the first half. Lucas is getting slaughtered again. I don't think it's with any great justification. He's on a hiding to nothing at Liverpool because he's not as good as Alonso. I think he's an okay player. Steven Gerrard was worse than him on Tuesday night. But he's Steven Gerrard, so obviously he's not going to get criticised.
Well, it was a huge surprise because Liverpool were coming in off that 6-1 victory in Italy against Hull, whereas Fiorentina hadn't impressed so far this season, apart from that the defeat of Sampdoria, the form team in Serie A. But they hadn't really looked impressed. They had a brilliant performance. I think one of the key things was the fact that Stefan Jovetic played. I mean, he's a very exciting young player, but Cesare Prandelli, who, despite the kind of forward-thinking reputation that Fiorentina have, he's a little bit old school. He kind of learnt his football at the knee of Trapattoni in Juventus in the 80s. He seems very unwilling to actually use Jovetic in a starting role. He keeps bringing him in as a late sub, and the team always looks a million times better when he comes on. Because Gilardino was out, Jovetic played, bingo, two first-half goals, and Roberto's your uncle.
He was the. I mean, I think Aurelio should take a little bit of flack as well. I mean, without Mascherano, Liverpool's core, which has served them so well in Europe, did look a little bit fragile. I think Barry's right, though. As journalists, we're too keen to focus on, you know, one of the big four. They lose a game, suddenly we analyse it in so much depth. You know, after United's defeat to Burnley on the season, it was United. Then it was Arsenal. Earlier this week, it was Chelsea. It's like playing whack-a-mole. It's just whack, 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 whack. And I think everyone just needs to calm down a bit. And Chelsea, for example, have won 9 out of 10 games. You know, they're not a club in crisis yet. You read the headlines early on this week, and also today with Ancelotti talking about lambasting his team. I think we all should probably just calm down.
Just ease
down.
I think the games this week do sort of illustrate that the group stages are a waste of time in the Champions League, in that, you know, it doesn't matter if you lose a game. It doesn't matter if you even lose two games. Teams have gone through to the knockout stages with 7 points. If, as the competition should be, straight knockout, unseeded, you know, or open draw, then you know, you've got a good game coming up, because Liverpool, they're 2-0 down after a game with Fiorentina. Now, they, you know, they'd be playing Fiorentina at home to stay in the competition.
But they are.
Pardon? Well, they're not. No, they're not.
Well, they've got two games against Lyon next, who do look very tasty.
Yeah, but Lyon are French. They'll fall like deck chairs come the end of the group.
Well, it's the same French team that won the World Cup in 98, won the European Championship in 2000.
Name a French club side that's done anything of interest in the Champions League
Olympic
in the last 5 years.
Oh, okay.
Last Olympic Marseille. Name an Irish side that's
Monaco
done anything
got to
ever.
The final.
What?
Name an Irish side.
Irish sides aren't in it. You're trying to tell me Lyon are, you know, going to have a say in who
French,
goes.
French club sides have never had the resources and the money that, you know, England, Spain and Germany have.
I don't care why they haven't done it. I'm just saying they never do.
Well, we'll see.
Paul Doyle
habitually,
you know, predicts that they'll do well and they never do.
Right. Well, this is a very different Lyon side than the ones we saw in the last few years, who always failed when it came to crunch time. It's a very, very...
This one hasn't failed yet at crunch time.
Well, they haven't been to crunch time yet, but it's a new team. They reconstructed a whole new team. There's no Juninho. All the old guards have been slowly moved away. There's new guys like Pjanic, who's fantastic. Kosovo Serbian player. And I think they can do Liverpool over two legs. So.
Well, I hope you're right, but I remain to be seen. I'm not convinced.
Right. All right, well, going back to Liverpool for a sec. So they have this defeat. Mascherano presumably still out this weekend when they make this trip to Stamford Bridge for the big game of the weekend in the Premier League.
Well, he'll have to do something different in midfield because, I mean, whisper the name, Xabi Alonso is a huge miss. I think everybody's realising that, even probably Rafa, if he's looking into the mirror, honestly. And they haven't really got a solution. Without him, they tried something different in Florence. It didn't work. Of course, Fiorentina are a side that keep the ball very well. Bit of a different game against Chelsea, where it's more about power and numbers. I think in midfield are going to be a problem. But they'll have to do something different because even though Chelsea are not really that good themselves, you'd make them favourites at home.
Not on the strength of their performance against Apple.
Right.
Last night they were very, very poor and very lucky to win.
Hmm.
And Apple were turned Apple over, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
But Apple were injury
Dom
ravaged.
Tal came
their
up with
core
a new one,
was
actually.
Missing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had a new one. Dom Tal said it all went pear shaped for Apple in Chelsea visit. But yeah,
the thing is, though, that Chelsea have been playing like that away in the Champions League for the last 5 years.
Often against Liverpool.
No, well. As well, but you know, they win and they win even bad games, or they draw bad games. I mean, they have a terrible record away from home, but it just do enough to get through. And I don't think you can really judge them on that performance.
So, better check out on Sunday.
Well, Cech hasn't been the same keeper, sadly, since that horrible injury he suffered against Redden a couple of seasons ago. I think
Hilario, he's still better than Hilario, though,
yeah, possibly. But I think, you know, Cech was. You know, I think would have been the next Schmeichel. He was that good. He's made a number of mistakes in big games over the last couple of years. It is obviously a loss because Hilario doesn't play that often and has been suspect on a couple of occasions. But you know, I don't think it's as big a loss as it would have been, you know, say 3 years ago.
All right. Well, Fernando Torres silenced there in Florence. Top scorer though in the Premier League is it 8 goals or is that in all competitions? I think possibly. Is it going to be a good game? This, do you think?
It's a tricky one because normally, you know, there are bywords for tedium when Mourinho and Benitez were there. But the last couple of years, they've, you know, become expansive and exciting. And both teams so far this season have really gone for it. So I'm hoping it might be half decent.
Mm.
Having said that, I'll probably end up 0-0.
Mm. Elsewhere in the Champions League, Arsenal beat Olympiacos to take command of that group. They're 3 points clear of the Greek side, Standard Liège and AZ Alkmaar on a point apiece. And, well, Man United had a bit of a scare against German champions Wolfsburg. And Raphael Honigstein, you were there.
I was there and I was rather impressed with Wolfsburg because I thought they might be overwhelmed by the occasion. You know, none of the players had ever played Champions League before the first game against Moscow. And they really acquitted themselves very well. And I was
lost 2-1.
I know, of course. But I was very impressed with the way they attacked United. They played the usual system of two strikers and an attacking midfielder. You know, they weren't afraid. It was a very, very open game. They dominated quite a bit of possession. And, of course, they weren't quite good enough to beat United or to get the draw. And you'd expect that.
You would.
You would.
Hmm.
I mean, you wouldn't.
No, I'm saying you would. Would you? I don't know. I'm asking. You would.
I wouldn't expect them to beat them, no. Of course. And they wouldn't either.
Right.
They would have perhaps hoped for a draw. So, in the end, the result was just on the balance of the, you know, relative powers
really?
Of the teams.
Really? So, from a German perspective, you'd regard the German champions going to Old Trafford as best you can hope for as a draw?
It's not because it's German champions against English champions, because it's one team who's never played in the Champions League before against a team who's been in the Champions League, I think, 12 years in the running or something like that. I mean, or I don't know if they ever missed out on the Champions League, actually, since they started the competition. So that is a big difference. You need the experience at that level. And, of course, Wolfsburg, even though they have, relatively speaking, quite a financial muscle behind them, are nowhere near the level as United are. I mean, they have a stadium with 30,000 that they hope to sell out most times, and they come to Old Trafford. So it is a big step up. But as I said, I mean, I was actually very impressed with the way that they really intelligently attacked United. In the Bundesliga, their game is very much based on power, on fast counter-attacks. But here against United, they really slowed it down, and they kept the ball really well. And that's how the goal was created as well. So I thought they showed a bit of intelligence. And the fact that they were really upset afterwards, genuinely upset with themselves, would suggest to me that they've really arrived in this competition, that they could get out of the group. And, you know, they won't get much further. But I think for the first time round, this is a creditable performance.
CSKA and Moscow looking good in the group as well. Currently on 3 points alongside Wolfsburg. Man United leading the way. United will be facing Sunderland, Barry, this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting sort of, just to see how far Sunderland have progressed under Steve Bruce. I don't think Sunderland will win. I'm pretty sure they'll score, because I think Vidic and Ferdinand have looked very, very shaky this season, as they did towards the end of last season. Darren Bent's in the form of his life, and Kenwyn Jones is going to be a big handful for Vidic and Ferdinand, so I expect Sunderland to score. I also expect them to concede, so you know, maybe a 1-1 draw for them or 2-1. Sunderland, Steve Bruce still hasn't settled on his back four yet, but if he can get his full strength back four out, which is Bardsley, Turner, Mensah, or Ferdinand, and George McCartney, then, you know, 1-1 I will unconfidently predict.
There you go. Well, that was a quick bit of the Champions League. We've got loads more to come as we look at the Spanish sides. And, of course, that shock result at the San Siro. Victory for Zurich. But first, a little bit of music.
Football Weekly Extra on Guardian.co.uk.
Big drama on Wednesday night at the San Siro. Milan beaten at home by FC Zurich. Absolutely extraordinary stuff. Or not, given that this is a team that failed to score against newly promoted Bari, failed to score against Udinese, failed to score against Livorno, etc., etc., etc. And does seem to reach very much the end of the rainbow, Milan. And the question now is, what's going to happen and when, how quickly? What are they going to do to sort it out? Did you see the
it's
game anyway?
One question there, James.
Yeah.
Well, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, and I hate to be the person, I never thought I would mention betting odds before Sean in today's podcast, but I had a look at Zurich last night.
I fancied a draw, actually. I did not think they were going
to... I think they were 13-1.
Right.
And I had a look, and in the end I said, nah, not even Milan can lose this.
Mm. Well, they hit the post twice.
How wrong I was.
Once with the last kick of the game, a Zambrotta shot, a rather lovely shot, but yes, defeat at home, which has put them third in the group, equal with Zurich. It's not impossible for them to still qualify, but I think it's not even the defeat itself. It's just the fact that it's symptom of an absolute collapse of the team.
It's not a surprise in a way, because you've had such an ageing team for so long. I know you've bigged up Ronaldinho, but for me, he hasn't done it.
I thought he potentially might But this
whole thing sort of stinks of lethargy. It's like going to one of those old people's home where people wait to die. There's no, apart from Pato, there's no injection of youth in there.
There has actually been an injection of youth, but it hasn't worked. So Thiago Motta, actually, who is an injection of youth at the back and has played well so far this season, was out injured yesterday, and that was part of the problem. Abate, who Leonardo seems to think is a right back, hasn't been at all successful. Pato has gone, after his two goals in the opening game of the season, has been gone into complete collapse. Pato and Inzaghi both had absolute sissers yesterday. Inzaghi missed two or three shots that normally he would have put away, and Pato had the best chance of the game and missed.
So how long do the Italian press give
Well,
Leonardo?
The question, what's going to happen with Leonardo? Because he clearly does not have an idea of what to do, and you can sympathise because it's not obvious what you can do with this squad. Towards the end of the game, Milan were given a free kick with sort of seconds left. And Zambrotta was kind of lining up to take the kick. And it was obvious he just had to hoof it up, get it in the mixer. And Leonardo was just standing there, flapping his arms at him, shouting, get it up, punt it forward. And Zambrotta wasn't even looking at him. He was just kind of getting on with his business, grimly. It doesn't seem like there's any great respect. Leonardo's a lovely bloke in that, but he's a nice guy who's been around the
as
team.
As he showed with that elbow in the face of some American.
Tab Ramos.
Yeah.
Lovely bloke.
The good news for Milan, though, is that the next two games against Real Madrid.
Right? Indeed. So, before that, they've got Atalanta at the weekend. Atalanta away, and Atalanta have just changed their manager and brought in Antonio Conte, former Juve and Inter midfielder, and Italy midfielder. I think he played internationally, didn't he? Antonio Conte. With a very successful hair transplant, Antonio Conte. So
he always had
an inspiration to all of us.
He's got a proper job done now.
Has he?
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
Have you seen that referee? Who's the ref who was suspended Clattenburg. For...
Yeah. Clattenburg.
He, a lot of his hair seems mysteriously grown back.
No, it has. He's had a job done as well.
You've never,
but,
never been tempted, James?
No. I've embraced my bereftness.
It'll come to us all.
You didn't happen to read my, and there's no reason why you should have, my minute by minute report on the Chelsea Apple game last night.
I didn't, Barry.
But there was a photo on it, and it was the Apple strikers contesting a ball with John Terry. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. I should, but he looks quite like you, and his expression as he headed the ball, it was said in the report that it's what we imagined your cum face might look like.
I had no idea you'd imagine such a thing, Barry, but God bless.
Well, you see, I've never seen it because you're always standing behind me when you pull it. So I don't know what it looks like.
My word.
Can't
the goats last week, this week. Anyone would think you had some kind of
fixation.
Fixation, though, yeah. Anyway, can I get back to the other Italians? Of course, we mentioned Fiorentina. Inter, before their game at Rubin Kazan, the Gazetta's front page was, Jose, can you still remember how to do it? And the it was, of course, win a game in Europe, because it had been six that Inter had gone under his control without a victory. And it's now seven because they had a 1-1 draw at Rubin Kazan. The blame, though, this time has been mostly laid at the feet of Mario Balotelli for his petulant series of fouls that saw him sent off. And the other game, of course, Raphael, was the Bayern Munich-Juventus game, which I think the Italians quite happy about Juve's point there. A point of gold, it was called by one paper.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I didn't see the game. I was at Old Trafford. But by all accounts, Bayern really created some fantastic chances in the first half. Ribery.
Did you see that Ribery chance?
Yeah, it was brilliant. Solo effort, past a couple of players, and then tried to lob Buffon from very short distance, so the ball only landed on top of the net, unfortunately.
Buffon said if he hadn't wanted to score the goal of the century.
Yeah. So, in fact, they scored no goals whatsoever. And I think you're right. I mean, Juventus did create a few chances as well in the second half. They came quite strongly. Diego looked very good once again.
What a player. What heart.
He is fantastic. Yeah. But the big news for Bayern is not really the draw. It's the fact that Robin got injured.
What was the reaction in general in Germany? I don't know if you had the chance to see, to the Bayern draw. And in general, not a desperately good set of results. Wolfsburg got beaten. Stuttgart drew.
Yeah, I mean, Stuttgart were very, very disappointing yet again. They had a 1-0 lead away to Urzi Ceni, the Romanians, who are not really a very good side. And yet again, inexplicably, they stopped playing, let the opposition in, made some really terrible mistakes at the back. And they're going nowhere in particular. Also in the league, they're very poor. I think with Bayern, you know, there's a sense that they played really well. They're really convinced in an attacking sense, even though they didn't score. They're probably okay with the point against Juventus because I think both sides believe that they'll get out of the group more or less comfortably, even though Bordeaux might have a different view on things. And with Wolfsburg, I think, you know, people say, yes, that was very impressive. Perhaps it could have done more, but I think they also think that Wolfsburg were going to get out of the group with Besiktas and Moscow. So people are quietly confident that I think they're going to have a good season.
Just to finish off part two then on the Bundesliga, mm-hmm. Because we haven't had your dulcet tones explaining the state of things in Germany's top division so far this season. Hamburg top. They beat Bayern Munich last weekend. Bayern Munich are what? Down in seventh, is that right?
Yeah. They were in third before the game. It's very, how to say, it's very choppy at the moment. You lose a game, you go down 5-6 places, you win a game, you're top. It's only Hamburg and Leverkusen who've shown any sort of consistency, and that's why they're both topping the league. Hamburg looked very, very good all throughout. They had one or two wobbles. They lost 3-0 away to Rapid Vienna in the Europa League, which was a real shock. But domestically, they looked very good. They lost Paulo Guerrero. He's out with a cruciate ligament. He's a big, big loss for them. So up front, they're a little bit thin, perhaps, to go all the way in the Bundesliga. But they look very, very strong.
Living in Berlin for the last month or so.
Here we go.
What was fascinating was how the two Berlin sides, Hertha struggling terribly, FC Union or FC Union, whatever you pronounce it, second in the Bundesliga, the second division. I was lucky enough to go to their game against SC Paderborn, which they won 5-4. But what was fantastic about it was the fact that it cost €10 only. Second, that you could watch a game.
Did you have to build a bit of the stadium for that?
I'll get onto that. But you could have a pint while watching the game. The singing was incredible. I don't, but you know, everyone around me was boozing away, and it felt like, you know, when you went to watch football, you know, when I started watching in the early 80s, you know, if I had a finished 0-0, I wouldn't have minded, because for €10 and a good atmosphere and a sing song, it was worth it, and it was great. And what's fantastic, I think, about FC Union, they were an anti-Stasi team, you know, during the DDR. And also when their stadium, which was called, Rathal will correct me if I'm wrong, Stadion an der Alten Forestei, the stadium near the old Forester's house, was going to be knocked down or was going to be dismantled a couple of years ago. So the fans basically said, OK, you know, we'll come and give our time to rebuild it. And I think they had 10 or so professional builders, and the rest were just fans,
right,
which I think is a wonderful story. And hopefully they'll get promoted this season to the top flight.
Well, they'll miss Hertha, who'll be coming the other way, probably, will they?
Yes. Well, Hertha fired their manager Favre after a terrible run of six games without a win. They're down on the bottom. But another interesting thing about Union is that they had a sponsor who gave them a lot of money. But German magazine Der Spiegel revealed that this sponsor is tied in with old Stasi connections.
Ooh.
And so the club said, "We don't want your money. You can go to hell." And they lost all that money and then got somebody else in.
Wow.
It'll be interesting to see if they do get promoted, how long it takes for them to drop all these principles and just go the way of other club in the world.
Is it right when I read that Lothar Matthäus has emerged as a front runner to become the new Hertha Berlin?
It is wrong.
Oh.
Because he's only ever the front runner in his own mind.
Oh, right.
The thing is, people call him up and say, "Are you interested?" And he says, "I'm interested, there's been no contact." And the next phone call goes to the club and the club says, "There's no contact, we're not interested."
Right.
So he's always immediately ruled in and then they're immediately ruled out again. And there's today a big interview with him saying, "What have I done wrong? Why is my image so bad?"
Listen, you also mentioned sponsorship there, and Desfara posting in on our recent discussion on of inappropriate or unusual shirt sponsorship. He says, the German punk band Die Toten Hosen, which means the dead trousers.
Die Toten Hosen.
the Tottenham. It still means dead trousers, though, doesn't it? Yeah. Famously sponsored Fortuna Dusseldorf when the club went through a financially tough time in the beginning of the century. Rafa must know the details. He says Fortuna Dusseldorf had one of the nicest football shirts of the time, black with die Tottenhosen trademark skull on the chest. Terrific.
There's I think a college hurling team and Gaelic football team in Ireland, University College Cork. Their jersey is black with a skull and crossbones on the front.
No. Oh.
Very, very fond of
it. Small world, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Small world of football, which no longer has any room for Mick Harford of Luton. Fired. What will Sean say about it? What will Uncle Jimmy say about it? We'll be discussing that and much, much more in the next part.
Hello.
Oh, Sid Lowe. Sid
Hello,
Lowe.
I'm in the car. Yes. I hope the police don't see me.
Well, pull over, Sid.
I can't. I'm in a tunnel with nowhere to pull over at the moment.
Cranky.
I reckon I've got at least 600-700 more metres, and it's a gridlock at the moment.
Oh, I see. Well, if it's a gridlock, then that's all right.
Well, why don't you talk to me very quickly, and if the police come, I'll drop the phone.
Huge week, of course, in Spain, as everywhere else with the Champions League, and some very impressive performances, most of all Real Madrid and their 3 goals in 7 minutes against Olympic Marseille. And the Spanish paper's going a bit crazy about this one. Hey, Sid.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't actually have a brilliant first half, I didn't think, Real Madrid. I thought it was a little bit flat, but they certainly got into gear in the second half. And the third goal in particular was a wonderful goal. I have to say, and I'm treading on a slight bit of a minefield here, because I was sitting in the stands and still haven't seen the replay on the television. So I don't know for certain if it was a penalty on Cristiano Ronaldo. But looking from where I was, it was a fantastic moment, because it reminded me of Argentina against Cameroon in 1990. Yeah. Ronaldo went down the wing. A guy came across and tried to maim him. Ronaldo just about hurdled that challenge. Another guy came across and tried to maim him too, just about hurdled that challenge. Went into the penalty area and wallop, down he went. Now, I have to say, again, I haven't seen a replay, so I don't know for certain if it's penalty. And I know a couple of people who said it wasn't, but it was a moment that had me giggling anyway. I think the Madrid fans around me wondered why I was giggling and not cheering the penalty, but there you go.
I saw it this morning, Sid, and it shouldn't have been a penalty. But,
right. But
I believe now
hard,
that
wasn't he?
I believe now that Ronaldo may miss Real's next game because he's got ankle knack as a result of that
Real's next
challenge.
Game is against the Seville side that just slaughtered Rangers in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and also it's not just that, you know. I think I mean, obviously that's a key part of it, and I'm quite glad that, you know, Seville did do what I said they'd do, and that's go and slaughter Rangers. But I do think it's more than that. In look at the league at the moment, of course, Real Madrid and Barcelona have won every single game, and there's a real feeling that this is a league that's down to just those two and no one else can compete. This weekend is the first time when we're going to see if that's true, and I think most of Spain really, apart from the Madrid fans, obviously really want Seville to beat Real Madrid, just so that we can believe we've got a proper league title with lots of teams in it, because Seville have won every game since the first game of the season when they were beaten by Valencia. They're looking very powerful, very strong. No one here is creative as Madrid or Barcelona, but that is a really, really big game, and say not just because of what they did in the Champions League, but more importantly because of what they're doing in La Liga at the moment.
Mm. Just mention that Champions League game. We're talking about the penalty that maybe shouldn't have been. How about Naismith that should have been but wasn't?
Well, to be fair, they are talking about this in Spain as well. They are saying that Seville played very, very well, but that they were given a slight helping hand in terms of the way the game panned out. That said, I don't think anyone here is trying to take anything away from the fact that Seville showed an ability to really kind of bully teams and push teams off the ball and get goals that perhaps other sides in Spain don't have. And this is something that's been going back for a while now, that Seville have been a stronger, more physical, more intense side than other clubs in Spain for a good best part of 5 or 6 years now.
Sid, are the Catalan press and the fans of Barcelona coming around to the view that perhaps they got the better deal with Ibrahimovic and Eto'o, the switch?
Well, I think the Catalan press obviously are to some extent, but then that's preaching to the converted, isn't it? They want to believe that, so they're inevitably going to believe it. I think that, you know, we talked about this a little bit, me and Barry, on Monday, that of course the jury's out until Ibrahimovic plays against a very, very good side, but he is playing extremely well. And he is giving Barcelona, as you know, we were saying at the start of the season, something they lacked, which is the ability to hold the ball up, bring other people into play, strong in the air, and in the penalty area. His touch is quite phenomenal.
Good on you, Sid. Officers taken away is all yours, I think.
Hello, handcuffs, no.
Save your one phone call, Sid, for us on Monday, if you could.
Oh, I'll do that, yeah. I'll hang around rotting in a cell until you ring.
All right, nice one. Thank you very much, Sid. Drive
my
safely
pleasure,
now.
Bye-bye.
Don't drop the soap.
Yeah. Now, Sean, you've got an honorary season ticket at Luton, of course, after all your brave words in defence of this noble club now fallen on hard times.
They have indeed, and Mick Harford, a legend at the club, such a legend, in fact, that in the 90s, he had his own nightclub in Luton called Legends. Got rid of by mutual consent this morning.
Have you been to Legends?
No, I was more of a Chicago Rock Cafe man in my
What was the difference between the two nighteries?
I think being about 15 or 16, I could actually get into Chicago Rock Cafe. Well, I think Legends had, I think they were more discerning clientele.
All right.
I'd say they were all right by the sound of it. Right. But okay. Where I grew up, there was only one nightclub, there's still only one nightclub, Melba's, named after Dame Nellie Melba.
Right, okay.
Where I did some of my best damage as a lad.
Excellent news. So, but just on the subject of Luton, so a bit of a shock for Luton faithful then.
Well,
Shooting Bambi.
Well, yeah, because unfortunately, if you stay long enough at a club, eventually fans are going to turn against you. You know, it was only back in, I think, March, April time they won the Johnson's Paint Trophy. He's a legend at the club. You know, he was a great, great player in the 80s. But, you know, on Saturday, they won 4-3 at Cambridge, having been 2-0 down again with 10 men. But when they were 2-0 down, fans were chanting them, "You don't know what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing." Then they lost on Tuesday night at home to Stevenage. But they played Tom Craddock, who's tiny, up front, and they were pumping long balls to him. So perhaps the fans had a point. But it's a great shame that, you know, someone like him has gone out.
Yeah,
I was talking to Yvonne Fletcher, or sports Luton, desk administrator this morning. She's Mrs. Luton, and she was saying that, like, the club have had to slash their wage bill by about 2/3 in the last year, and that, you know, they finally got rid of all the players, or the remaining players, who were on $3,000 a week. So the, you know, the average wage now is about £600 a week, which is, you know, still good money for non-league football. But when you do that, you're going to get players, you know, who of that value. And she reckons that a lot of Luton fans thought it would be much easier than it's proving to be to get out of the Blue Square Premier and back into the Football League.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Sobering tale. A couple of posts. Portlander Jimbo, I'm intrigued to find out more about your experiment. Watching Match of the Day with the sound off. Here are my guesses. One, you were pretending you were the commentator. Two, you were seeing if listening to Dr. Dre made games seem more exciting. And it does, actually, interestingly enough. Three, you were sleeping on the streets and can only watch it through a shop window. Where's the respect? Where's
the love?
James E.D. Where indeed? This is a James E.D. question. As a keen City F fan through the 90s, who would be your favourite player from that period? Roberto Mancini. That just leaves us with the Premier League. Let's have a look through the round window at the weekend's fixtures. Let's see. Saturday, Bolton take on Spurs, eh? Jermaine Defoe with that broken hand. He'll be out. Crouch presumably getting the nod. Did you know that since Bolton were promoted in 2002, they are undefeated against Spurs at home? 6 wins and 2 draws.
I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
We were getting a lot of abuse from some readers, one in particular this week, for not paying enough homage to Spurs for their magnificent win over Burnley at the weekend.
Mm.
So, yeah, Spurs are great.
Well, there you go. We'll see at the... it's still called the Reebok, isn't it? It's the other one that changed. Yeah, we'll see at the Reebok on Saturday. Now, I did ask...
Sorry, one thing about... Yeah. Gary Megson is still being hounded by Bolton supporters who appear to hate him.
Hmm.
And he doesn't seem like the most likeable man in the world, but I think he's doing a pretty good job there. And it seems to be very unfair. And would you agree that Bolton fans just don't appreciate what they have and are...
Maybe they're romantics. Maybe they like to see... expansive, wonderful attacking football, even if it means...
Like the good old days under Big Sam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even if it means that you might not get the result.
He keeps making veiled remarks, Megson, about the fact that he's one bad result away from getting fired. I don't know if that's the case, but a lot of his post-game interviews seem to hint at the fact
I think it's quite interesting this week, because we're coming up to the International Week, which gives, traditionally, October International Week gives you 10 days to get a new manager in, and there are a number of managers that are under a lot of pressure. Paul Hart, obviously. I think Wolves v Portsmouth is very interesting. I mean, you know, Portsmouth lost 7 in a row. They're odds on favourites to go down. But Wolves' defence looks as rickety as a Scooby-Doo ghost train roller coaster. And you think, if Portsmouth are going to win somewhere...
Sorry, he's been away for a month. He'll get better.
I thought that was quite good because it came to him straight away.
Right.
If Portsmouth are going to do anything, or start winning games, you'd think against Wolves would be a good place to start.
Right. Probably Wolves are thinking exactly the same thing about Portsmouth, though.
Yeah. But they've won two games already this season, Wolves. Yeah. They've conceded, 13 goals in seven, so...
Pompey players are not being paid for September, according to the Portsmouth, or some Portsmouth local paper. That's not going to help. Or maybe it will, because, you know, there have been plenty of examples of clubs in financial crisis outperforming everyone's in Italy. Yeah, no, various ones. Napoli under Lippi, who got into the UEFA Cup, despite the fact that the club had gone bankrupt about 3 years before, and they were living on handouts. And we mentioned Roberto Mancini. He famously did something very good, I can't remember what, with Lazio, when they were basically one...
What about Diego
one lawyer away from being...
And Domenico Tomasi, didn't he, when he was injured for a
Damiano Tomasi.
Damiano Tomasi.
Yeah, he basically just went for a minimum wage thing. But the interesting thing about Lazio was that after the kind of the money is no object years of Craniotti, when they were kind of spending on a level which I think even Abramovich struggles to match, they went into complete financial meltdown, and the players were basically having to be asked not to go through the legal proceedings to get their money back from the club, because the club are legally bankrupt. And despite that, they were doing brilliantly. And it does suggest that sometimes pampered football players perform much better when there's a wolf at the door.
But I think if I was earning $3 million a year for several years and suddenly the Guardian came around and said, look, we can't pay for 6 months, I think I'd probably get over it.
You would.
But if you'd spent it all on cocaine and gambling... And right. Didn't have any money
and
left.
Super soft leather lederhosen.
I have a theory that there are a lot of broke footballers going around. Guys earning like 20, 30, 40 grand a week who have no money.
Mm.
And just because they all seem to be inveterate gamblers and not very good gamblers.
Crystal champagne isn't cheap.
Crystal champagne, Aston Martins, which they drive into trees and whatnot. So yeah, I'd be interesting to see in years to come if you know, you're going to have the modern-day equivalent of Stan Bowles hanging around a betting shop in North London, looking for spare change, basically.
Elsewhere this weekend, well, on Saturday, Burnley, Birmingham. Stop me if there's anything you want to throw in. Hull, Wigan. Can the Tigers' misery continue?
It certainly can.
Yep.
Is this the dullest fixture list
No, I think last
ever.
Week was.
next week?
Well, last week's was... Right. Made for really grim reading before a ball was kicked, but it turned out to be quite fascinating. Yeah. So
where's the surprise going to come this week then, Barry?
Well, I'll go back on what I said earlier. I will go for Sunderland to beat Spurs or to beat Manchester
United. Barry tipping.
I don't think they're 11-1 with sportingbet.com.
Are they? Well, there you go. There you go. Stranger things have happened. Elsewhere, Arsenal taking on Blackburn on Sunday at the Emirates. Mm? And then Chelsea-Liverpool, we talked about that already. Everton-Stoke, West Ham-Fulham. West Ham have yet to pick up a single point at home.
Well, and Fulham haven't done that brilliantly either.
Right.
17th. Well, they've got 6 points from six. And the destruction of Europa League.
Yes.
I think Fulham will have a tough time this year. I really think so.
Right, okay.
Hot on the heels of my sanctimonious lecture about footballers being gamblers and not very good ones. If anyone's listening to this on Thursday before, 7:30 or 7:45 p.m., I've had a bet on, is it Bate Borisov, to beat Everton tonight. They're 6-1, and Everton are at home, and Everton are going to play them without 9 first-team regulars.
Really?
And looks to me... I don't know much about Bate Borisov, I must confess.
Champions League last year. I have opposed Everton at a very short price as well, so...
Are Everton saving the players so they can get into the Europa League next
yeah,
year?
Exactly. I think they have a lot of injuries, to be fair.
But surely someone... you look across Europe, most of the teams in Italy and Spain, and certainly in England, they're putting out reserve sides, not in Germany... But you kind of think, what is the point of this whole long turgid? It's like the Champions League, but even duller and more turgid over the whole qualifying period.
We've said this before in the pod and been accused of hating football,
right?
Because we say we're not interested in the group stage. But I would argue that the reason we're so down on them is because we love football and we want to see competitions organised the right way.
UEFA Cup should be a straight knockout.
There you go, Villa, just to finish off our weekend preview. On Monday night, of course, are hosting Man City, which will be a big game. Should tell us a lot about both sides. So we look forward to that on Monday. We will be back, of course.
Does anyone realistically think Manchester City can win the Premier League this season? I do.
I agree.
Well, there you go. Excellent. On that note of the unison, let's leave it for Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back with Football Weekly Classic Edition on Monday, rounding up all the bloody weekend results, etc., and all that other stuff. So we'll be hopefully joined by you then. For now, though, many thanks to Sean, Barry and Raphael and producer Pete, and have a lovely weekend.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.